It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed at the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois, member FINRA and SIPC.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
I'd be rich.
And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
Good morning, John Graney.
Good morning, Larry Lexo. And how are you doing on this beautiful morning?
I'm telling you, if it got any better, I don't know. Couldn't stand it.
If I was any better, I'd be you.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do we have on tap today, sir?
Well, what's going on? The fiduciary rule comes into play on the 9th.
I'm still holding out hope.
Are you? Well, it's tomorrow.
There's been some rumblings and some rumors that it may get delayed again. We still have some time here, but we shall see.
Yeah, we got about 12, 14 hours left. There may be a last ditch effort. Who knows? But
I give up on that every time we go to talk about it and implications and so forth.
You just don't want to buy me lunch.
Well, that too.
Mm-hmm.
That too. Mm-hmm. I'm cheap. So anyway, welcome to the Financial Cafe, where a good cup of coffee and common sense investment advice come together to meet. And today, the month of June is Men's Month. We had May for women, June will be for men, and then July we'll do for children. But since we have Father's Day coming up.
That is coming up, the 17th, I believe.
So we will be talking about some issues, planning issues, a little bit specific to men, geared towards men in general. They could be applicable to women. As we talked about before, some of these roles are changing. There are a lot of stay-at-home dads now, and there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. But in general, I think we still are in a situation where the man is the main breadwinner, if you will. The woman may work as well, but we wanted to focus on some things that men need to be thinking about this month, assuming that they are the breadwinner for the family. Any other thoughts on that?
My thoughts are, and one of the interesting outcomes of doing a good financial plan.
Folks, that took less than 2 minutes for him to get there.
As we all know, which includes a plan that is in writing, has specific time frames, specific objectives, it is implemented and then monitored. One of the specific outcomes is in a family unit, usually one person or the other takes responsibility for the financial decisions and or maybe the tracking of existing contracts and investments and so forth. And in a situation which we have all had where neither takes responsibility for tracking things, if you have a good plan, your financial planner can help you in that regard. I know I met with a client recently, and they are doing very well for themselves, and they had a number of insurance policies, probably as many as 10 or 12 different insurance policies of different types, and really didn't have a good handle on what they were, how they worked, when they came due, what they were paying for them, and even a question of on a couple of them if they were even still in force. And that's just not where you want to be in terms of a financial plan. There should be listed out, which we're in the process of doing. You know what the costs are, know if you're paying too much or, and rarely too little, what the coverages are, and does that fit your plan? Because there are a lot of questions that go into that, and as was indicated by this individual, they were relying on the other member of the family to kind of keep track of things, and that just wasn't getting done. So Now we're going to tackle it together and see if we can't get some semblance of order in the process. But as far as men or women, as John said, most of the things we'll be talking about really apply to both. But we'll try and tailor it a little more to the male counterpart, as history has shown that they generally, and I don't know what that statistic is anymore, John, but generally the male is the primary breadwinner and maybe making a little more for a variety of reasons than the other counterpart. But so we'll address some of those issues as we go forward.
Yes, I don't know the absolute value, but I know that value is changing as far as who is the breadwinner of the house. But before we get to that, grab your cup of coffee. You know what I have today, Larry?
What do you have?
I have Highlander Grog.
Oh, no. He'll be awake.
You know what else I have today?
I won't be able to shut him up.
I have a smile on my face because I have Highlander Grog.
Folks, if you could only see John's smile today, you would know that he had Highlander Grog.
Delicious. We have one little happy co-host right here.
I should have known. You know, I had a lot of fun at Chef Shop 20th anniversary celebration. It was a good time. I know you and I were both there for a number of hours. Lots of prizes were given out, lots of food, lots of drink. And just generally, you know, it was a nice party.
It was. The food was great. I had way too many of those little sliders. Those things were ridiculous.
Oh, yes, yes.
And we spent a fair amount of money at the chef shop. We got ourselves a bunch of popcorn. And I'm on board with you now. I really think we should review all the flavors of the popcorn.
I think so. Yeah, that's we'll put that on the list. Well, I'll have them get us a list of what they are so we can keep track of them.
All right, I like that idea. Got some fudge, and yep. I, of course, got my Highlander Grog, and I still have about half a pound left, so we're doing good.
I'm surprised. But it's been a week or two. I'm surprised you have any left, John.
I am, too, especially since I took it on our little camping trip over the weekend and was sharing. I actually shared the coffee with some people.
Okay.
So, anyway, grab your cup of coffee, folks. Sit back, and let's go through some common sense financial investment advice, the In the Market segment. I have an article here. I think because we are on a 24-hour news cycle now that the media just makes news. You ready for this one? Here's the headline.
Let's have it.
U.S. stock futures edge higher as Super Thursday, air quotes, of potential catalyst arrives.
What does that even mean?
But why do you think it's a Super Thursday? With options and so forth, and I don't trade options, but I know some Fridays of the month there are, you know, triple witching, and you know there's some terms applied to it. So I thought, what's this Thursday thing?
I have no idea what Super Thursday is.
Super Thursday
except it's the day before Friday.
And I guess because it's actually a really nice sunny day. No. There's a trio of events going on today, so they decided to call it Super Thursday.
There we go.
The UK general election. When isn't there an election going on in the UK?
Yeah, it seems like every month.
I swear. I thought this May lady just got in there. How long has she been in there?
Obviously not long enough.
Okay. So anyway, there's a general election going on. The European Central Bank policy meeting is taking place. Okay. And the testimony of the former federal FBI, James Comey. I am tired of that
who's
story.
Who's he? Why do we care?
So anyway, but the stock futures edged higher based on Super Thursday and whatever those three events have anything to do with.
I think the writers have to really, maybe they're on some Highland Grog, I'm not sure, but they have to really work at coming up with some of these excuses or so-called reasons for the market performance. I mean, it's totally fabricated.
So anyway, year-to-date numbers for some of the more popular indices. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 8.17%.
Not bad.
The NASDAQ is up 16.5%. The Russell 2000, which is a small cap index, which kind of surprised me, but maybe if the tax policies and so forth go through, this number will come up higher, but it's up 3.33%. The S&P 500 is up 9.47%, and the S&P mid cap is up 5.26%.
So through mid-year,
roughly.
Through roughly mid-year, the market is doing well. And there are those, I'm sure, who could say that it's following the Trumponomics. As I heard that word the other day, I thought, okay, here's another one to put in the dictionary. Old Webster's rolling over in his grave right now. But, yeah, it could be because of that. It could be because of some of the saber-rattling that's going on internationally. It could be a lot of reasons. Or it could be the business is just doing better than it has in the recent times. So I'm going to go with the latter.
I think it's a combination of we had a good earnings season, and I think there is a lot of optimism. I tell you what, if the economic policies, the tax reform, and healthcare do not get addressed this year, it could get interesting quickly.
It's not going to look good after that.
The bond market, U.S. corporate bonds are up 3.98%. Barclays U.S. aggregate bond is up 2.66%. U.S. core bond 2.76%. And the international index, which is the EFI, is up 14.94%. Now, Europe had been beaten down a lot more than the U.S., and I think money has gone back over there. The P/E ratios are a little bit more palatable, shall we say, in Europe. So far this year has been better than expected, but I certainly don't hold my breath that there will not be some sort of correction.
Well, the naysayers, of course, were predicting that for the full year of 2017, we would be somewhere in the 6, 7, 8% average rate of return, certainly upper to mid single digits, and we're already there. So it may be a good time for those of you who have investments in non-qualified accounts to consider selling off. It's sell high, buy low, and take some profits, and also look at some of your other holdings and potentially take some losses so you can offset the profits.
Absolutely. It's a good time to look at that portfolio and rebalance the portfolio.
As always.
Now, I have an article here. I didn't even read it. I just read the headline, and I'm not even going to get into the DOL rule, but Labor Secretary Acosta, concerns with DOL fiduciary rule not heard during original rulemaking. Whatever that means, I don't know what's going to happen with that, but that's all I'm going to talk about on the DOL. So I have another little trivia question for you. Can you name the number one state that's most attractive for retirees?
Could I name
the state that is most attractive state for retirees, according to a recent report from LPL Financial?
Alaska.
You're not even trying.
Okay, New Mexico.
Close.
Getting closer.
Nebraska.
That one, I would not have put that in the top 10.
This is why the Midwest will be the hottest retirement destination. Here's what they had to say.
Certainly not Illinois.
Yeah, taxes are too high. The Retirement Environment Index, did you know there is one?
I do now.
Uses a combination of public data related to health, finance, housing, employment, education, community, and quality of life indicators to evaluate and rank states based on their attractiveness to the pre-retiree cohort. This index is weighted to prioritize finances over other indicators. Financial stability and improved quality of life indicators help push the Cornhusker state to the top spot. I need to find out where LPL is headquartered. If it's Nebraska, then I'm not really going to trust this information at all.
Yeah, let me check that out here.
Said only 10% of states received an A, 40% states were given a C, so that sounds like a normal distribution curve to me. Classic retirement destinations, Florida was number 29. The Carolinas, North Carolina was 21, South Carolina 38. Arizona was 40. It's too hot.
Boston, Massachusetts.
Boston, Massachusetts.
That's where LPL's headquartered.
Certainly not going to be there because it's too expensive.
Yeah, that's pretty
good. Anyway, that one kind of caught me off guard. But, a good example are my parents. I remember probably was maybe 6 months or so ago, a little family get-together, and my parents moved out here from Philadelphia 11 years ago. And they were commenting that they probably couldn't afford to stay retired back in near Philadelphia because the cost of living was too high, and it, moving out here was probably one of the best things they did as far as maintaining their, you know, sort of quality of life and all that with being retired.
There are a lot of factors that have to be considered in retirement, as you all know, John. And one of them, of course, certainly deals with taxes.
Hey, did you know that men waste thousands of gallons of fuel every year driving around while not asking for directions?
I did not know that.
Okay. I have a bunch of these little tidbits to share during the course of the show today.
You have to ask Siri.
Yeah, I guess that's not... I guess that little myth is changing just because
I don't know that that's the case anymore you know, you hit the little button, you go, Siri, where am I? Where am I going? How do I get there?
Anyway, I have all these little fun little strange tidbits about men.
Generally, it works pretty well. But yeah, men, as a rule, probably in the past have not wanted to ask for directions, which begs the question, you know, if they ask Siri, do you have a choice if Siri is a male or a female?
Oh, well, mine is a, I have a, well, there's a couple different settings, but we had the British. It sounded much more proper.
Really?
Yes.
I did not
left
know
turn ahead. I can't left do turn. It. My daughter can do it. She watches too much Harry Potter. Anyway, so as you were saying, and I so rudely interrupted you with that fun little tidbit.
Interesting. What was I saying, John? I don't know what I was saying. But yeah, do you know what the most commonly purchased type of insurance is?
Term.
All insurance.
Life.
Well, I have no idea, but I thought it was a fun question. Actually, doing a little research, I think probably the most commonly...
Seriously, you know that's going to bother me now until we find the answer.
I know. That's why I do this thing.
Okay, so men can slip into a coma while sitting in a retail store chair waiting for you to come out of the fitting room. That's true.
I believe that.
Absolutely. I remember the commercial, I don't know if it was a beer commercial, but all they got in that center of that clothing rack and inside there was this man's cave. I wish that really existed.
Yeah, okay. I'll be back in an hour, honey. Go grab a beer and, you know, some chips and watch a little.
Well, you got the computer. What is the most popular form of insurance being sold?
Most popular. All right, he's going to make me look it up. But
I go with life insurance.
My estimate is the most popular type of insurance that's purchased is auto insurance.
Well, nah. All right, see, we knew coming into today's show that we were going to be talking about life insurance, disability, and there's another one.
Yeah.
I lost my train of thought because you threw that ridiculous question out there. This is not a property casualty show. It's the Financial Cafe.
Ah, but there's the rub, as they say. Who said that?
Person that cooks on the grill a lot.
Yeah, probably. There's the rub. What type of rub is that? Is it code 3? We like code 3 rubs.
Oh, I do.
Very nice stuff. But yeah, probably the most common. But other than that, certainly four types of insurance that you should consider buying, but probably haven't yet. And one of them, obviously, is life insurance. Making sure that the question
long-term care.
In that terms of duet.
I knew we were going to talk about three, and I just popped in my head, long-term care.
Oh, LTC. Yeah, LTC coverage.
Okay, anyway, carry on.
Certainly one of those. But the four that evidently are least purchased but probably most needed are life insurance, number one, disability, which really should be number one, but it's not because you have a much higher chance of becoming disabled. They have a 1 in 4 chance of becoming disabled throughout your lifetime before retirement, as opposed to a significantly smaller chance of requiring life insurance upon death. So disability insurance really should be right up there at the top. Personal liability or umbrella coverage in terms of your liability. A lot of people are not even aware of umbrella coverage.
I have umbrella coverage because we have a pool.
Oh,
and
yes.
I tell you what, dollar for dollar, it's the most affordable insurance out there.
It really is because it's if you don't have it, you're really gambling. Because if you do, the type of insurance that umbrella is, anyone really who owns a home, drives a car, should consider an umbrella policy because they do provide broad liability coverage, which is over and above your standard auto or homeowner's insurance, so that once you've exhausted those coverages in a case of a loss, then you the umbrella kicks in to cover that catastrophic event. If there is an accident, regardless of fault, and you get named and or sued, then the insurance companies are certainly looking at the amount of coverage that you have, and you can get $1 million or $2 million umbrella liability policy for, typically, last time I looked at what we paid for ours, it's probably $150, maybe $200 a year. So for, you know, 10 to 20 bucks a month, you can have enough coverage to basically save your house and maybe your business and a lot of your other retirement assets in the event that something would happen in especially with a pool or where you have any high-risk events. I remember going to a barbecue a number of years ago with cousins, family members, and they had, imagine that, four-wheelers. And the teenagers decided to take the three or four, I forget how many there were, four-wheelers out for a little run. And, of course, they find a spot. They were out in a farm area with some woods, and they found a neat little spot that you could run the four-wheeler up, and it was just enough of a lip that you could get all four wheels off the ground and fly over it. And they did that, and it was, probably didn't take them an hour. And one of the kids came running back to get the parents because one of the other kids flipped the four-wheeler over on top of him and ended up dislocating a shoulder, breaking an arm. And so let's just say it threw a little damper on the day. But that's exactly, you know, he was lucky. He only broke a broken arm and a shoulder dislocation, but it
could. Do you know what three words are always uttered before a man does a stupid thing and gets hurt?
What are three words that are always uttered?
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Ba-dum-bum.
Well, fortunately, these kids were not drinking beer at the time. Their parents were, but nevertheless, it was an event. Nobody had planned on going out except to have a good time on the four-wheelers riding through the woods, but the unexpected does happen, so you have to prepare for the unexpected. Be ready just in case something does happen. So liability insurance is something that every man, woman, and child really should have to cover you in the event of that catastrophic event that happens to come up. But disability insurance is the other thing that we'll talk about, particularly for anyone who is working, because, John, you well know, what is your most valuable asset? Have some more coffee.
My most valuable asset.
Mm-hmm.
Larry, there's just too many jokes that just went flying through my head.
Yeah, I could tell. I could see your eyes move.
I was like, boy, we're on the radio. Let's see. My most valuable asset is my wife.
Ding, 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 ding. Okay, he got that one, Amy. It's not the right answer, but we'll give him points for it anyway.
My
house. The most valuable asset.
Well, not my house. My income. My future income.
Is your income. Your ability to earn income. Because think about it for the moment. But everything we do in life is based on an assumption that we will be earning income. And in most cases, that we will be earning more income than we're spending. That's part of the financial plan back there, John. But what happens if,
been a while.
If that 1 in 4 chance occurs that you become disabled, you cannot work, and there's different levels of disability, certainly, who is going to replace that lost income? Probably no one, unless you have a very wealthy family friend or parent. The bank certainly isn't going to loan money to someone who's disabled. I don't know that any family member is going to, because the risk of not being paid back is relatively high if the individual can't work. And I know I've shared the story many times before. When you look at disability insurance, you want to you can only replace around 60 to 65% of your income earning ability. Obviously, the point of that is if you replace much more than that, people who went on disability would never want to go back to work because they were making just as much as they were before. But if you get the proper disability coverage, you're replacing about 60-65% of your pre-disability income. The policy that you get should have a rider that would allow that to increase as you earn more, because face it, most of us, when I went to work a few years ago, we won't say how many, the expected income was significantly less than what it is today for someone who's been in business or even a college grad. So the amount of disability coverage should go up as your income increases. And you need to look at, is the company stable? You know, what type of rating does the company have that you're getting disability insurance from? You need to look at what it does cover. Does it cover what we call own occupation in terms of performing a specific duty? As I've shared, you know, we insured many of anesthesiologist groups where they, they earn a low to mid six-figure income. As an anesthesiologist, a very important and critical specialty, and I had one who in his early 50s had a stroke, and although he certainly recovered, he was prohibited from serving in his role as an anesthesiologist on the risk that he may have someone's life in his hands and would have another event, stroke or other type of occurrence that would not allow him to continue in that capacity. So he couldn't be an anesthesiologist. His income dropped probably by half. And even though he could be a doctor, his own occupation coverage allowed him to replace a significant amount of the lost income because he couldn't do what he was trained to do. Most policies today will allow you an own occupation classification, but it may be much more limited. His policy was lifetime. I don't know that you can even buy that today. Usually 2 to 5 year on own occupation is about all you can get. You need to make sure that the disability coverage is not just catastrophic or total disability. As the Social Security Administration, when someone applies for Social Security disability, it's defined as their inability to work in any capacity anywhere doing anything, basically. So if they could flip hamburgers, they could work, and they would not qualify. And the policies are similar. If you have a total disability only policy, it's not going to pay unless, unfortunately, someone, you know, were to basically become a quadriplegic and couldn't read, couldn't write, couldn't do anything with the computers today and whatnot before it would pay. So partial disability is critical coverage as far as that. If you're 50% disabled, then the policy would pay 50% of the benefit and so forth and so on. The other coverage is, how long will it pay? Will it pay to age 65? Some policies actually go past age 65 now into 68 or 70 before they drop off. Or is it limited to, you know, 2 years of coverage, 5 years of coverage, 20 years? Obviously, the price is going to vary depending on the amount of coverage you have, the number of years that you have it. And when you look at partial disability definition, whose definition is it? Is it determined by one physician, by two physicians, by the company's physician? So disability policies are fairly complex. There are also a lot of standalone disability companies out there that insure specific events, so that if you become disabled, they will pay X number of dollars a day for 30 days or 60 days or 90 days until you get back on your feet. They may also, if you break an arm, you get this. If you dislocate a shoulder, you get that. So there are specific, you're insuring specific things that would happen. And I'm not a big fan of doing that because the odds are, you know, it's kind of like gambling. Because that's basically what it is. You know, you're assuming that you're going to have a specific injury to be covered by the policy. So a broad-based total and partial disability policy for a period of time to replace the income that, face it, that's what buys the food. It pays for the mortgage, pays the insurance taxes. It pays for, you know, the lights. It buys everything else, including your retirement income. So you can replace your loss of of income and putting money away for retirement through a disability policy. So disability really is an undersold and underprovided type of insurance, which is critical for anyone who is a working adult. Because if you have a family where, you know, you have a single wage earner and they become totally disabled, you really have no choice but the other wage earner to go to work and hopefully be able to replace that income to continue accumulating retirement assets as well as paying for pretty much everything else. So it is a form of insurance that you hope you never have to use it, but if you do, I might mention also there are a couple of companies that now offer return of premium disability insurance. So you actually can take out the policy, you pay for it throughout your life, hope you never need to use it, but if you do, it's there. And at the end of whatever period that the policy expires, if you have not used it, you get all your premiums back. So that's kind of an interesting twist on disability coverage. If you can't manage to come up with the money otherwise, certainly I would look at that not as a savings vehicle, but just as a make you feel a little better about spending the money to cover a possible disability that may occur.
Men like gadgets.
Men do like gadgets. I love gadgets.
I do. I'm a gadget person as well. Did you also know that men like to barbecue? These are kind of the no-brainer ones.
Yeah, men do like the barbecue. Now, why is that? Is that the
sudden
the like open this, flame, you know?
Yeah, to cook if there's danger and fire involved.
Well, there is. You know, danger, there's fire, you know, there's raw meat on the
grill. There's all kinds of perils
there
that you got to watch out for.
Exactly.
So, yes, another type of insurance policy that you should have and not want to use is life insurance.
Absolutely. After you get your basic liability and property insurance, then let's take a look at life insurance. You know, who needs life insurance, John?
Not the dead person.
Not the dead person, certainly. My philosophy...
You should call it survivor insurance.
It really is survivor insurance. To coin the phrase, there have been a lot of names.
Not the TV show.
A lot of, Survivor, yes. They could use some insurance, actually, I think. Life insurance is really for anyone who has an insurable interest. An insurable interest is if you have a home mortgage that might need to be paid off in the event of a death, if you have other debts that might need to be paid off. If in a family situation, it's not uncommon for a new family to want to provide coverage so that in the event of a death, it replaces the income that would otherwise be used to raise the family, potentially. And I know John and I differ a little bit on the need for college and who's paying for it. But if someone is so inclined to cover part or all of the cost of college, that certainly can be built into life insurance. They're really, in our opinion, I'll take liberty in sharing that in John's, in my opinion, you don't probably need life insurance as an estate tool unless you have an estate that exceeds the exemption amounts today, which are pretty substantial for most. Now, that can change, obviously, from year to year. But right now, unless you're dealing in a large estate, you probably don't need insurance if you've properly planned for retirement and you have the money to cover funeral expenses and related issues. But life insurance is related usually to a specific time frame and a specific payment. If you have a $200,000 mortgage on the house and you want to make sure that that's gone so the survivor doesn't have to deal with making payments, that certainly can trigger a term insurance policy. It could be the same duration as the mortgage, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 30 years, whatever it happens to be for that particular purpose, and as well as college funding. You know, when the kids are out of college, you don't need it anymore. If you're funding a business, I know a lot of small business administration demands that anyone who becomes eligible and takes out a small business administration loan for starting a new business, they are required to take out life insurance on them so that the SBA can be paid back in the event of something happening to them. So that's not an option in that case. They feel strongly enough about it that if you want the loan, you're going to get the insurance, which creates an interesting situation if that individual is uninsurable. So then you run into different questions. We do go from, you know, the term, basic term insurance. And again, I'll mention as before, with disability, there is a return of premium term available out there from a couple of different companies. So for the person who says, you know, term insurance, I'm going to pay for it for 10 years, 20 years, whatever, which may be, you know, $10,000, $20,000 over that period. And what do I get for it? Well, nothing if you don't die. And we hope you don't. So the return of premium term offers an alternative for those who you're going to pay a little bit more than you would just for straight term. But at the end of the time period, the lump sum of all the premiums minus any payouts during that time come back to you as a check. And you also have a couple of other settlement options. But you, in essence, have had the insurance for that period of time. And the only loss you've suffered is the potential loss of earnings or income on the money that you paid for a premium. So that serves a purpose. We certainly talk about the oldest form of insurance, as far as my research has shown, is whole life, where the insurance company accepts all of the risks and you pay a specific amount, much higher amount, over a period of time. And at the end of when the policy endows, which could be, used to be all the policies endowed at age 100, now most of them run out to 120. Not that I know any 120-year-olds, but the insurance companies feel that that is now the new endowment age, that if you take out a policy, you could pay for it till then. A common method on whole life insurance that people use is once you've paid it for, and it varies, let's say 15 years, maybe 18, maximum probably 20 if you're with a good company, the dividend, which is paid to the policy internally, exceeds the amount of the premium, so a policy can be put on a self-pay mode. So after the first 15, 20 years of paying for it, there's enough cash value that the dividend generated is more than premium, so the policy would exist forever and would cover its own costs. So it's not an uncommon way of covering that if you want to have a little extra cash. And not to say that the cash value built up in a whole life policy is also something that shows up on your balance sheet. So when you're taking out loans or going to a bank to take out a loan, they will include the amount of cash value you have in your policy as an asset. They may even want to assign it so that they have the ability of getting at it if you don't pay the loan back. So
what are some of the cons with whole life insurance?
The biggest con that most people see is it's expensive. It is two, three, four, depending on your age, times as much as term insurance. So if you don't have the cash, you really don't have the ability of doing whole life. There are those who say, you know, buy term and invest the difference. And I don't disagree with that, certainly. If you can buy term to, as the name implies, last as long as you need it, and after that you're not going to need it, then probably taking the difference in cost of a term and a whole life policy and investing it, you would be better off than putting that money into the whole life policy. There are also those who say that, you know, in a low interest environment, certainly a whole life policy, the better companies that are out there, the A-plus rated with all the rating agencies, they've been paying in the neighborhood of 7% dividends. So as a method of growing assets, an internal rate of return of 7% is a lot better than CDs.
Absolutely.
Right now. So there's a lot of pros and cons. You know, get a good advisor that understands insurance as well as investing and look at all of those.
So you build up the cash value. Can I access that cash if I'm still alive?
You can access that cash as a loan.
Okay.
And there is an interest rate attached to that. So if you borrow $20,000, say you can borrow usually up to 90% of the cash value in a policy. So let's say, you know, it's got $40,000 of cash value. You know, you could borrow up to 36. I wouldn't recommend it. But and then you're going to pay a market-based interest rate. And if you pay the interest, then you just have the loan, and when the policy does finally pay off, it would pay off the loan. The balance would go to the beneficiaries, but otherwise you can pay the loan down, you know, so you can actually have a source of funds that you can borrow yourself. And I don't mind saying that actually 25 or so years ago, while I was transitioning careers, I borrowed a fair amount of money from whole life insurance that I had, developed over the years to use as a stopgap until the new business that I purchased got up and running, and then I paid it back. So I basically financed my own career using whole life insurance. So not for everybody, but it can work in certain situations.
Now, can I borrow against a term policy?
There is no cash value, and you cannot borrow against a term policy. So the only way you're going to get anything out of that is if you die.
That's a bad option.
That is a bad option. Yeah, it's not the one you want to take.
Okay.
But good questions. The other two I'll mention briefly. Types of insurance is universal and variable, which if you go back to our blog, and I'll mention that all of our shows have now been posted online at www.thefinancialcafe.us. So go out to thefinancialcafe.us, and you will see all 40-plus of our shows, and there is at least one, if not two of them out there, that deal in great depth regarding the different types of insurance and how they work and the pros and cons and so forth.
Yeah, so that was all recorded during our morbid
yes, it was.
Show.
Our morbid show, whenever
yes,
that was.
When we had the stretch of shows that covered some of these more unpleasant topics.
We definitely did. So take a look at that for the universal and variable. I'll just say I'm not a fan of either one of those. For various reasons, I think they turn out to be much more expensive than alternative methods of doing that. So
this one's for you, Larry. Okay. Getting a man organized is like herding a cat or shooting pool with a rope. Now, I've seen Mr. Lexell's office, and it is amazing. It is not organized.
Thank you, John.
Not organized, but whenever I go in there and I say, hey, Larry, do you have this? Somehow he knows where it's at.
Well, there are those of us who have perfectly clean desks, like John, most of the time anyway, and most often can find what we're looking for, although not always. And then there are those of us who use the stack method. And Diane and I, my wife, is morally opposed to the stack method. I have my office at home, and there are actually times that we just close the door, and I say, it's okay, honey, just don't go in there, because otherwise it's a little crazy.
If you were married to my wife, there's a good chance that you would die from the stacks falling over on top of you.
Oops.
Yep. So anyway, how much time do we have left? This is going by fast.
You're down about 16 minutes.
16 minutes. All right.
Another type of insurance, as we're talking about it. So we've covered personal liability umbrellas. Men should definitely consider, if you have a business, you got to have it. If you drive other individuals in your car, I'm not talking about Uber. I'm talking about, you know, even if they ride to and from work with you, that is a liability. If there's an accident, it's your fault. You could end up losing everything because of, a momentary lapse or inattention or whatever. So get a liability policy. It's cheap coverage. It will take care of those situations that are totally unexpected and maybe allow you and the family to survive a bad situation and not make it worse. Disability insurance, I think, is really next. Every family who has a wage earner and relies on that wage earner to pay the bills, you know, when we have the financial plan, we assume a certain amount of income. If you take that income off the table for whatever reason, particularly disability, the plan totally disintegrates. It falls apart. There is no income. You have no plan. So disability insurance is critically important, a variety of those types. We talked about life insurance. And again, young families. I see a lot of young families that have, you know, their first child, and, you know, before you know it, they have a second child, and sometimes they have more, sometimes not. But when I asked them, you know, have they addressed the life insurance need? It's like, well, we need to get to that. You know, nobody's really talked to us about it. But I do know of several couples in the local area over the last 5 years that the wage earner did not take it upon themselves to get life insurance. And in freak accidents, whether it was an automobile, one was riding a motorcycle, which, of course, is a higher level of liability and danger. And they were killed. And the significant other, the person who was left behind, had no way of paying bills, lost the house, went into foreclosure, ended up having to move back in with mom and dad. And if you don't have a mom and dad you can move back in with, yeah, I mean, you know, maybe looking at becoming homeless. So life insurance is important, particularly for new families. It's fairly inexpensive, particularly for term coverage, but work with a qualified agent who has experience and knowledge of all the different types of insurance to get you the right policy. We now may want to talk about long-term care insurance.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, one of the biggest concerns I have in terms of financial planning, whether an individual has a significant net worth or an insignificant net worth, is what happens if they become ill during retirement. Because we plan and plan and plan and plan for retirement at whatever age, 55, 60, 65, some pushing it out to age 70 now. You know, they've taken the time, they've made the decisions on when to take Social Security to maximize benefits, when their spouse is going to get Social Security, all the basics of planning that we go through in a good financial plan. And then we throw out there, well, what if at some point, and the odds are pretty good, you know, one in four, one in five, that one or the other is going to go into a long-term care situation, a need during their retirement. So if you're 70, 75, 80 years old, and all of a sudden one of the partners end up going into a nursing home, as we've noted, a nursing home costs today, from personal experience, or in the neighborhood of $5,000-$6,000 a month, and go up from there. So when you're talking about $70,000 to $100,000 a year to provide nursing home coverage for an individual, that can put a catastrophic dent in a retirement plan. So how do you fund long-term care insurance? That is the question.
And now, I mean, I just kind of, with any of the other insurance policies, the actuaries have caught up with the reality, and the policies being written now are certainly not nearly as generous or cover as much as they have in the past. And, you know, you got to factor that into it as well, because some of these policies really don't provide very much.
Well, the good news, there's so many things I'm thinking about right now, John, but the good news is within our planning software, the Money Guide Pro, it allows us to play the what-if situations. We're able to go in, lay out a perfectly good retirement plan, an effective plan with a statistically 80-85% chance of success. So our probability is way up there where it needs to be. But then we can plug in what if one or the other goes into a facility for a period of, you know, a year, 2 years. The average is between 2 and 3 years. And requires that type of care. So you drop out another 60, 70 grand a year at age, say, 75. What does that do to the survivor? And where does that leave the plan? And it'll show us, you know, if you drop from an 80, 85% success rate down to maybe 50%, that's a problem. So you need to start looking at how do you address it. And as John indicated, the policies that you really want, you can't even buy anymore. Policies have gone from covering you for life to at most 5 or 6 years of coverage, and that may accommodate 90% of the situations you run into. The benefits, you have an elimination period. When does the coverage start? Is it, you know, 60 days, 90 days? Some of them push out to 6 months just to save money. But if you're going into home, particularly with the increase in Alzheimer's cases, the worst case situation where someone goes in and requires round-the-clock care, that can last. I know my wife had an uncle who lived probably 7 years, 8 years in a facility due to Alzheimer's.
Well, can 10 years, I mean, it can last a long time if you're physically healthy, but it's the mind that has unfortunately failed you. It could become an issue quickly.
Yeah, the mind goes, and they have to be cared for around the clock, and the partner may have all good intentions of doing that themselves, but it wears on them and actually can have a significantly adverse effect on their health. So what do you do? So the policies you want, you can't buy anymore because, as John said, the actuaries have determined that the losses are significantly higher than originally thought. The lapse rate is significantly lower than originally thought, and people are keeping those policies, so they have raised prices. You can get a traditional, what we call a traditional long-term care policy. You know, you may be able to buy a policy that gives you a six-month wait before it kicks in, pays upwards of a couple of $100 a day, I'm talking about at that point. So you cover the $5,000-$6,000 a month you're going to need, and it may only cover it for 2 years or 3 years, depending on your benefit period. You would want to also consider having what we call community-based services. So if they're able to come into your home and provide, you know, a nurse or physical therapy or dialysis or whatever it happens to be, it could be done at home at a much lower cost than going into a nursing home. Those types of policies, you're still, for an individual, going to be in the $2,000 to $3,000 a year range. Currently, based on the companies out there. So if you're covering a husband and wife, you know, you may be between $4,000 and $5,000 a year. And the question is that a cost that you can build into a sound financial plan and be able to pay it for the rest of your life? If so, great. And I've got clients who are doing exactly that and feel comfortable with the coverage and the cost, and they're okay. I have many clients who can't afford an extra $5,000. That's $60,000 a year, buying protection in the event. So that has led us to different types of long-term care coverage. One of them that has come up is an annuity-based contract with a long-term care writer, so that if you're fortunate enough to have some assets, you can put the assets into an annuity contract, have it invested in the market, and let it grow. But you take a multiple of the amount that you put in for long-term care coverage only in the event that you need it. So let's say you have $100,000 in a CDs or savings or wherever that you are not going to need for retirement. By putting that into an annuity contract, you may pick up $200,000 or $250,000 of total coverage for long-term care. You know, read the fine print. Make sure you know what it covers, what it doesn't cover. But there are contracts that are good contracts from quality companies that will provide that coverage and allow you to cover it that way. There are also other life insurance policies now which have addendums or amendments or options attached to them that allow you to, again, similar, you know, you put in $50,000 into a life insurance policy, you have a death benefit, which maybe the death benefit is $100,000 on that contract, but your long-term care benefit may be $225,000. So if you die, you know, your 50 turns into 100. If you go into long-term care, you can spend up to $225,000 and all for the mere cost of about 50. So there are a lot of options depending on your particular individual financial needs, your plan. We go back to the plan, John, that allows you to fit that in. And there are those that just say, I'll roll the dice and see what happens.
Well, I mean, financially, that, you know, unfortunately, that could be the only option that they have. We need to thank our sponsor. We haven't done that. We've just been busy going into these different topics and important issues. So, men, this is the month that we talk about issues that face men, assuming that they are the breadwinner for the family, that they need to get they need to have their insurance options looked at, reviewed, make sure the beneficiaries are who you want them to be, But we need to thank the Chef Shop because this coffee has just been great today. A big smile on my face.
John is grinning across the radio console at me. So, you know, it's and when he looks down, I get the glare off his head. But nevertheless, everything else looks good. Had to go there.
Wow. Okay.
Thanks to Nancy Scott at the Chef Shop. They have a great store, great story, history that they've built and developed. They've been a wonderful patron and a wonderful support underwriter for the Financial Cafe. We hope that will continue into the indefinite future. But you got to go by there. They have so much fun stuff. If you're thinking about what do you get Dad on Father's Day, go to the Chef Shop. I can absolutely guarantee you, you will walk out with a smile on your face. And Dad will have one, too, when he sees the bag of popcorn or the fudge or both or the coffee. You know, those are three options. Of course, they have the big green egg.
I was just going to say they have lots of grilling gadgets. We were talking about men like gadgets. Hey, did you know that men can spend hours thinking about nothing?
Let me think about that.
Yeah, exactly. Women don't get that. But, yes, we can just sit there and think about nothing.
I think that's called meditation, isn't it, John?
Yes, that is the new generation version of the. Anyway, thank you to the Chef Shop, and what's their contact info?
Well, I'm sure anyone who's been listening to the show can probably repeat it, but it's the Chef Shop. They're 2320 Troy Road in Edwardsville, Illinois, 62025. Their phone number is 618-659-9840. Go by and check out the Chef Shop for Dad. Do it for Father's Day. Let them know you heard us on the radio. And I believe they still have a few thermal coffee mugs left. We gave out a bunch of those at the 20th anniversary with green lids and red lids. And they really work well. John has one with a red lid right now. And I have one with a green lid. And I've been using it pretty much every day since we got them in. But that's a great thermal coffee mug. They're free. So just go in and tell them you heard us on WSIE FM 88.7, The Sound, and would like to get a coffee mug so you can buy some coffee and mix it up and put it in it and enjoy it with the fudge and the coffee. And I got to tell you, Dad will be happy. I would be thrilled with any or all of the above. So if you're listening, daughter, you know, that's just a gentle hint that you can stop by Chef Shop.
Subtle, very subtle.
Very. I thought that worked. Stop by and pick up something that I'm sure we will all enjoy while we barbecue on Father's Day. So,
speaking of barbecue,
yes.
How much time do we have?
Tell me about it. 2-3 minutes.
2-3 minutes. Would you be willing to pay roughly $2,000 for a burger? Just one burger.
I'm going to say no.
No. Okay. Surprised it took you that long. I had a hell no. But according to the Guinness World Records, that's exactly what the world's most expensive burger is. So anyway, what is on this burger?
Better yet, is what is in this burger.
Yes. It's made of Japanese dry-aged Wagyu-y. Which is essentially Kobe beef and Angus beef patties. Mm. It also has Oosterschlede lobster infused with Hermit Dutch Coastal Gin. Mm. I had to go and research some of these things because I didn't know what they were. It also has foie gras.
Oh, yeah.
Duck liver.
Foie gras.
Duck liver.
Yeah, no, yes. that I'm done right there.
Okay. Yeah, I'd deliver anything. White truffle. Remaker cheese. Did you know white truffles are 6 to 10 grand per pound?
I did know that, actually.
And you can now get Kobe beef. It's just a prime rib.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, at $100 a pound at Costco.
Wow.
The high-end stuff for like 11 pounds, I guess, which is what the size is anywhere from a grand to 3 grand for that. The Remaker cheese comes from just one farm. It's New Jersey cows from one farm. Anyway, then it has Japanese fruit tomatoes, Now, when I looked at a picture of a Japanese fruit tomato, it looks like those ones that you can buy at your supermarket with the vine still on it. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what they look like.
Yeah, okay.
Give me an Arkansas tomato any day.
Yeah, really.
And then...
Or homegrown.
And then caviar. Mm. Then there's also French lettuce. I'm not sure why French lettuce is different than the other lettuce. Iberian ham. Okay. And a specially concocted sauce made with 35 lobsters. Here is their problem. Mm. They use Jamaican Blue Mountain coffee on their burger. That's part of the sauce.
Mm.
They should have used a Chef Shop coffee.
They should have. They really
Madagascan vanilla, saffron, and Japanese soil. So all that's mixed in with the 35 different kinds of lobsters to make this sauce. And it cost around $2,000 for that burger.
That's okay.
Give me a Bubba Burger with some Worcestershire sour sauce,
mm-hmm.
some lettuce, tomatoes, Arkansas, mm-hmm. good old-fashioned American romaine lettuce.
Making me hungry, John.
Some Swiss cheese.
Yeah.
Ketchup, yep, mustard.
Yeah.
Yep. Mayo.
Good to go.
And I'm good.
Good to go.
And that probably cost me $5.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe if that. He's making me hungry, I tell you.
I look at the picture of this burger. It doesn't even look good.
Nah. I'll stick with the local stuff. Thanks again to the Chef Shop, Nancy Scott. You guys are great. We'll be in there, I'm sure, here very soon. Stop by if you're listening to the show and you like what you hear. Even if you don't like what you hear, stop by the Chef Shop and
that
ask them.
That would be Larry's fault.
Yeah, probably everything else. And stop by and pick up a thermal coffee mug to put some of your Chef Shop coffee in. Sample, take some popcorn, some fudge, get ready for Father's Day. And we'll be talking a little bit more this month about some of the other needs that men have that are not necessarily unique, but we want to point out, taking into account helping the family to survive in difficult situations. So I think we'll wrap things up for today, John. Say goodbye, John.
Goodbye, John.
You've been listening to The Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to John at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or to Larry at lexo@nickelfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private. Thanks for listening to The Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.